You're listening to Girovagando, the cycling podcast at the 2022 Giro d'Italia, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Today we're in Budapest.
Where are we, Lionel?
Well, we're in the back streets of Budapest on the opposite side of the Danube to where the time trial started. We're on the climb.
Are we in Buda or Pest?
We're in Buda.
Full marks. We're on the Zalag Uchka, which is the cobbled street. We could be in Belgium, couldn't we?
We could be in Belgium, although it does look kind of Italian. The architecture could pass for Northern Italy, as you said the other day. Daniel, no, do you not think?
I mean, in front of us, we've got a kind of, is it a council block? It's a probably a breeze block, very sort of utilitarian concrete block. But I see what you mean on the right-hand side. I was talking to one of our colleagues the other day. I said it reminded me, the whole city had reminded me of Milan and Turin. He said in particular Turin, he could see that.
Yeah. The yellowy building behind me there. Who is this? A rider's coming. Big cheer for the motorbike.
Who is it?
Well, that I will tell you when I can see them.
That is Nathaniel Tesfatzion. Do you know what, Lionel? I'm going to try and commandeer a fan here. Excuse me, do you speak English?
Yeah.
Are you from Budapest?
Yes.
What did you know about the Giro d'Italia a year ago?
I know everything because I love bike racing. It's kind of my life. I do triathlon, so bike racing is kind of part of my life. So I was really super excited. Yeah.
When you heard that the Giro was coming here and you thought about, this time trial, did you imagine a scene like this? Did you imagine there would be this many people?
I didn't. It's amazing, actually. It's a dream coming true and I just can't really believe it. Like I didn't imagine at all that there would be this much people. Yeah.
What's your name?
Gergő.
Gergő, thank you very much.
Thank you, thanks.
Daniel, that was us on the climb a little bit earlier on this afternoon. And if there was any doubt that Budapest might not embrace the Giro d'Italia, I think those doubts were dispelled this afternoon, weren't they? I mean, it felt very quiet in the 2 days running up to the race, but the city really turned out to create a corridor of noise on that climb. And I thought there were shades of Bologna 2019 as we walked up in the afternoon sunshine. It was a successful afternoon, I think.
Yes, it was, Lionel. And well, you said shades of Bologna. We compared the architecture. I compared the architecture there to Turin. But it was more like the 2019 Giro d'Italia, the start. And shades of that day as well with the result. Because Simon Yates had a really good day in Bologna back in 2019. He was second to Primoz Roglic, wasn't he? Over a similar distance. 8 kilometres that day. 9.3 today? It wasn't Budapest today. It was Pest Buda, wasn't it?
It was Pest Buda, that's right.
Do you know why Budapest is not called Pest Buda? Because, we should explain, Budapest is split into two halves. It was formerly two cities, I think it was actually three.
There was Obuda
correct.
As well.
And they were officially unified in, I think, 1873, Pest and Buda. Buda is sort of on the hill, isn't it? It's where the castle is. It's the more obviously beautiful, and we found today walking through it, probably salubrious as well, very leafy streets, a lot of swanky cafes and apartment blocks, whereas Pest is the kind of grittier, flat bit on the other side of the river where all the clubs are and all the movida is, as we've discovered over the last few evenings, Lionel.
Indeed.
And it was called Budapest, not Pest Buda, for two reasons, apparently. One, allegedly, the Hungarians don't like to pair consonants together, which I have a hard time believing, trying to decipher some of the Hungarian words we've seen over the last couple of days. I mean, saying the Hungarians don't put consonants together is a bit like Johnny Depp and Amber Heard saying they don't like petty disagreements or tension in relationships. I mean, that stretches credulity, I would say. And the other one is that in the order, were it to be Pest Buddha, then the respective halves or particles of the city name would be on the wrong side on the map.
Ah, okay.
Because Buddha is on the left and Pest is on the right when you look at the map. That's long-winded, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I mean, on the consonants, I mean, you can't see an S in the Hungarian language without seeing a Z next to it, it seems to me. We're at a very nice bar here in Buda. I mean, your heart must be fluttering because we're actually opposite a Jamie Oliver restaurant for some authentic Italian food a bit later on.
We're opposite. We're not in it.
No, we're not.
Yeah, I'm as aggrieved as I was last night when I saw a clip on social media of Mattia van der Poel squirting tomato ketchup on a bowl of spaghetti. I don't know when this dated from.
Wow. I mean, I'm sure...
Not even Jamie Oliver serves that.
We'll do a 20-minute part on that at the end of today's show. Tomato ketchup on pasta. I suppose we should go to the Tale of the Tapper, stage two. Started again at Hero Square in Pest and finished up here near to Buda Castle where, legend has it, Dracula...
Old Drac.
He's
buried in the labyrinth underneath the castle, supposedly.
Amazing. As I said, Shades of Bologna 2019 with the sort of flat city time trial and then the climb at the end. And over the course of the afternoon, several leaders, of course, in the hot seat. Alex Dowsett of Israel Premier Tech was the first of the significant leaders. He was a very early starter, of course, but then Jos van Emden, who's had time trial success in the Giro before for Jumbo-Visma, and then his teammate Eduardo Affini, they were leaders for a while. Jonathan Castroviejo of Ineos and Owain Doull of EF Education Easy Post went very close, and then Leonard Kemner of Bora Hansgrohe, who we saw take a flyer on the hill yesterday. Well, he took a flyer on the hill again today. He was a new leader, and for a long while I thought that time might really stand up, especially when Timon Arensman came close. But it was Matteo Sobrero, the Italian time trial champion, riding for Bike Exchange.
He looks very much like the Hungarian time trial champion in his national champion's jersey, doesn't he?
Indeed, yes. New best time. Tobias Foss of Jumbo-Visma was another to go close. And then Tom Dumoulin smashed it, first rider to go under 12 minutes. And I was just sort of lurking while Dumoulin was being interviewed by the Dutch TV at the finish line. And I kind of missed Simon Yates coming in and breaking Dumoulin's time. You said he was second in Bologna, 3 years ago now. But to beat Dumoulin's time, I thought that was an exceptional ride. And then really it was all about Mathieu van der Poel in the pink jersey. And as he came to the bottom of the climb, he was half a second outside or half a second off Yates's time.
What's worse, ketchup on spaghetti or that pink bike?
I like the pink bike. And, well, he was 3 seconds slower than Yates at the finish. Tom Dumoulin was third at 5 seconds, and then it was Sobrero, Ben Tulit, the young rider for Ineos Grenadiers, Foss, Kelderman, Kemner, Schmidt and Arensman rounded out the top 10. And then we've got to look really at the GC riders, haven't we? Because João Almeida was 11th, Vincenzo Nibali 12th, Bauke Mollema 14th, Pavel Sivakov and Richie Porte 15th and 16th for Ineos, Roman Bardet, Pao Bilbao and Richard Carapaz then all came in quick succession. So really the GC riders all stacked up together once again, just as they were yesterday. And then I suppose the GC riders who lost a bit of time, or the kind of overall contenders who lost a bit of time, Mikel Landa in 30th, Jai Hindley 32nd, Hugh Carthy 48th, Alejandro Valverde 55th, and then possibly not such good days for Guillaume Martin. He lost 45 seconds, and Emmanuel Buchmann, who lost 57 seconds. So Van der Poel stays in pink, making it the perfect day for Yates, really, because he doesn't have to defend that jersey tomorrow. Van der Poel also holds the points jersey and the King of the Mountains jersey, and they will be worn respectively by Biniam Gamay tomorrow and Rick Zabel. And Sobrero is in the white jersey as best young rider. But as time trials go, I thought there was a lot to pick out of that, and we'll do that in the next part.
One thing you haven't picked out yet is the crash that occurred 5 kilometres from the finish.
Daniel, you have a bandaged hand after.
On the cobbles on the time trial course this morning.
You did, but it is eccentric to call a running fall a crash. I'm not sure it's a crash. It's just a stumble and a fall.
Desperate attempt to whip up some sympathy.
Is your hand okay?
It is. Thank you, Lionel.
Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success. The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens.
Thank you very much to Super Sapiens. Their system of glucose monitoring is, giving me a lot of insight into my fueling here at the Giro. Went running this morning. I was not in my performance zone. No crashes for me, just the 5K. I wasn't really in my performance zone because I go running before breakfast, of course, so I haven't fueled. But there's just not enough time in the day to fuel and then run after, you know, I've kind of peaked and then settled back into the performance zone. But I did have a little bit of a glucose wobble around lunchtime. Daniel, you're not one for lunch, really. You'd like to push on through the day. I insisted
there were two big crashes today. Mine this morning, your glucose crash around
lunchtime. I did have a late lunchtime crash, didn't I? Because I was very keen to stop for lunch, and it took quite a long time for my chicken Caesar salad to be delivered. But it was very interesting watching my glucose levels and kind of comparing that to my mood, because my mood was going south just as my energy levels
noticed
were.
Noticed that as well.
We are going to get some expert analysis of my data probably in the second half of the Giro from an expert who knows what they're talking about. But if you'd like to find out more about Super Sapiens, go to supersapiens.com. It can help you with your training and your performance. Now, Daniel, Simon Yates in Giro time trials. I mean, I was kind of thinking that was a surprise result just because he beat Tom Dumoulin, who, of course, is a world-class time trialist. We know, of course, he's not been racing consistently at the very highest level over the last couple of years. But Simon Yates in the Giro time trials, he's actually got a better record than I had remembered, really, when I looked it up. He was seventh in Jerusalem in 2018 over just under 10 kilometres, second in Bologna the following year. It's in the longer time trials that he has a bit more trouble. But today, the course obviously suited him absolutely perfectly.
He has pulled out these fantastic time trial results sporadically over the years. The one that is freshest in the memory is his second place in Paris-Nice just a few weeks ago. And that was, in a way, it was similar to today. There was a big climb, or it was a very steep climb in the finale. And he talked a lot that day about the difference that his team's new equipment had made. And, you know, we hear this a fair amount, obviously, particularly when teams get new sponsors on board. And some of it is paying lip service to the sponsors. But it has been significant. It's been conspicuous this year how many of the bike exchange riders have talked about their switch from Scott to Giant Bikes. And I believe the sponsor, the bike supplier, Giant, has been a lot more involved and a lot more hands-on and demanded more from the team, as well as the other way around this year. And everyone is raving about the difference it's made. They've also done a lot of work. They've got a sort of time trial specialist there, Marco Pinotti, who's a former Italian time trial champion. He's done a lot of work with Simon Yates, with Sobrero, who we'll hear from in a minute. They've been to the wind tunnel in Silverstone, and it's paying dividend. I mean, there's not a huge amount of time trialing in this Giro, is there? There was the 9 kilometers today, and we've also got the final day, or 17.4 kilometer finale from Verona to Verona, which may well be decisive, but all told, that's less than 30 kilometers of time trialing. Nonetheless, Bike Exchange have decided to invest a lot of time and effort, and it obviously paid dividend today. I mean, the time gaps were quite significant, and it was interesting as a gauge of form, I think. I mean, Lionel, we've discussed this many times on the podcast, and I'm a big believer that these short time trials tell us an awful lot, particularly when there is a climb. And I think Simon Yates' performance today bore out what we saw in Vuelta Asturias last week, where he won two stages, and I think he is in outstanding form. There were other performances. I mean, it's been very obvious how well, for example, Leonard Kemner is riding at the moment. Yesterday, you know, he attacked on the final climb and he pulled out a fantastic performance today. There were a couple of others like that. I mean, Romain Bardet lost a little bit of time in the dying meters, but 24-second deficit for him in the context of his career and his performances in time trials, that's outstanding as well. And he's another rider who's absolutely hot to trot in this Giro d'Italia. You know, there were 27 corners, I think there were, on today's course. A lot of times where momentum was lost and had to be found again. And that is always a test of form, and I think we saw that today.
And the cobbles as well, wasn't there, on the climb? Just on the time trial bikes, I spoke to a man called Tom Davis from Giant Bikes at Strada Bianca. This was in the wake of Chris Froome's comments about time trial bikes and the suggestion that perhaps they don't have a place in the sport. And that was a response to Egan Bernal's crash, because he was in his time trial position, wasn't he, when he crashed in Colombia at the start of the year. And I talked to Brent Copeland, the general manager, I think he is, of Bike Exchange, about this, and I brought Tom Davis over.
I'm a regular listener.
And we had a little chat about the development of time trial bikes. And while he didn't disclose figures, I was left with the impression that significant money and time goes into developing bikes that are used by the very elite athletes in the professional sport. And, you know, they recoup almost none of that money from the sale of time trial bikes at all. But that technology then informs everything that goes into the development of the road bikes and triathlon bikes as well, which is a big market. But their triathlon bikes are not the same as the time trial machines that the pro riders are riding. And so while the riders, we can be slightly sceptical when the riders say their current bike is their best bike. But there's certainly been huge strides in the aerodynamics of bikes over the last 3-4 years. And those gains, you can look at the results and you see clusters of riders from the same teams.
You always see this. And you know, it's not always across a whole season, but you will find performances, collective performances from teams at certain periods of the season, which are often reflective of work that's been done recently. I remember at the Dauphiné last year, Astana had a fantastic day where they had, you know, 3 or 4 riders in the top 10. Jonathan Vaughters has spoken about this a lot with EF Education. He looks at, you know, the whole team's performances, not just, you know, the GC leader. And, well, should we hear from another Bike Exchange rider, Mateo Sobrero, who did reference precisely that. Well, I referenced it in the question. He agreed that the change in equipment this year has been a huge fillip for Bike Exchange.
So, Mateo, well, it looks like a great team performance from you guys. And since the start of the year, you've all been talking about the difference your equipment has made.
Yeah.
Just tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, me and Simon, we work hard with the team on the time trial. We try to improve our position and everything. We start working on that already in November, in January. We went to Silverstone for a wind tunnel, the biomechanic test, and yeah, so it's something that we have worked a lot on this with the team.
And two small time trialists, or two unusually shaped time trialists. But we shouldn't really be surprised by Simon's performance today, especially after Paris-Nice.
No, yeah, for sure it's a time trial, not for specialists. It's for me, for Simon, is a good course, of course. And yeah, with the final uphill, quite technical before. It's hard also to push a lot of watts on a course like this. So for light guy like me and Simon, for sure is an advance, yeah.
What did you talk about today after you'd seen the course? All of you had done your recons.
Yeah.
What was the sort of message? What were the key things to take into the race today?
Me and Simon, we did a recon this morning. We did two laps of the course. Yeah, we understand that on the flat, you can gain and you can lose, but not much time. But the point of the time trial was the last kilometer, kilometer and a half, where you have to push all what is left. until you die on the finish. So that's the key.
To paraphrase a very successful but perhaps not entirely accurate book, it's not about the bike entirely, is it? The legs have to do it as well. One of the points that Tom Davies made when he was talking about the time trial bikes and was that the rider has to be fitted to it, the position has to be right, the position has to be sustainable. Of course, over 9 and a bit kilometres, that position doesn't have to be quite so relaxed, perhaps. And of course, with the climb as well, as you say, Daniel, quite a key indicator of form with all of those corners and the climb. That's a lot of high end and a lot of punch required. And just to see Simon Yates beating Matthew van der Poel, because when van der Poel came into that climb, I thought that is peak Tour of Flanders van der Poel, the way he attacked those cobbles on the climb. But the clock says it all at the end, and Simon Yates is off to a flyer.
Well, and what a result as well, not to have taken the pink jersey. I mean, generally speaking, riders say, well, you know, I'm not going to say no to taking the leadership of a race, and it's an honour and it's a fantastic day. I mean, we've heard about it. We heard about it with regard to Attila Valter in the Kilometre Zero. He talks about what special memories that's left him with his experience last year. However, from a purely strategic point of view, not taking the pink jersey is absolutely ideal for Simon Yates. It may only buy him another 2 days of and bike exchange, another 2 days of not controlling the race, because I do think that Van der Poel will ultimately concede time to Yates on Etna in a couple of days' time. However, you know, those 2 days in the final balance sheet of the Giro when we get to Verona might be important.
I should just say, Daniel, as we're sitting here in this quite attractive part of Buda, I hope the background noise isn't coming through too clearly. I mean, we try to capture the sounds and soul and spirit of the Giro d'Italia and the other races we cover, but often when we're recording after the stage, the sound of the Giro d'Italia is of the barriers being dragged across.
The Giro d'Italia being dismantled.
It is. It's all got to be moved across to the other side of Hungary for tomorrow's stage, which is presenting us with logistical headaches, isn't it? We may well talk about that in tomorrow night's episode. At the finish of today's time trial, I spoke to another Team Bike Exchange Jayco rider, Damien Howson, who, it just so happens, won the Tour de Hongrie last year. And so he has experience of racing here. He's doing his own defence of the Tour of Hungary title these 3 days. The Tour of Hungary actually starts later on in the week, and I think Fabio Jakobsen and Elia Viviani are riding there, Dylan Groenewegen as well. So at the finish, I asked him what he made of the time trial, because I did hear a one-word summary of what he thought of it, and then I asked him a little bit about what it was like racing in Hungary last year. Well, I heard your one-word summary of that. Horrible. Can you expand on that now you've caught your breath?
Yeah, it might take me a while longer than I thought to catch my breath now. Yeah, it was such a hard TT to gauge. I found it quite difficult. It's quite an aggressive course. You have to be able to corner well, so be quite technically good on a bike. Take a bit of risk if you want to come away with some form of result today. Thankfully, it's dry. But yeah, out of those corners, if you wash too much speed off, you've either got to take the loss of time or you've got to have the power to get back on top of it really quickly. So after only seeing the course once this morning, I got it in my head as good as I could to remember. It was also quite difficult because I didn't have a team car behind me today to remind me of those corners. So I was constantly thinking what was coming up next while trying to gauge my effort, which is quite a hard thing to do when you're on threshold. But yeah, no, it was okay.
Normally a 9K time trial would be the opening day. Does it feel any different having done yesterday's stage of almost 200 kilometres? Because normally you'd have a longer time trial at, you know, a bit deeper than this into the race. Does it feel strange, you know, to the rhythm?
Yeah, more strange that yesterday was the long stage. I think, we're doing like a few pre-race rides. One on a road bike, one on a TT bike. And normally when you go on a TT bike, it's because the first stage is a time trial. So to put the TT bike back in the shed for one more night, smash out 200 kilometres yesterday with a very demanding 10-minute effort at the end, mind you, and then come out today and do a repeat effort essentially, about 12 and a half minutes for a solid time. So yeah, I don't think it changes too much. It's the same for everybody, and yeah, it's still very early in the race. I don't think too many people are feeling the effects of stage one just yet. Oh, I hope not anyway.
And I mean, you must know a fair bit about racing in Hungary because you won the Tour de Hungary last year. We've only seen Budapest and Visegrad so far. What's it like racing in the rest of the country? What do you remember about last year?
Yeah, it's fond memories, obviously, winning the Tour last year, and I was also there the year before. The race itself was super nice. I enjoyed it, and hence why I went back last year. I said I'd do Tour of Hungary this year. Just turns out the Tour of Hungary is the start of the Giro. So, yeah, a very nice region. There's some challenging climbs, lengthy climbs. I remember the climb that I won on last year was nearly a 30-minute effort, I believe, as well as some punchy climbs like the one we finished the time trial on today. The people have come out in force to support the race, which is great to see. Really made a tough effort today feel a lot more nice when the support is coming so loud and strong from the side of the road.
Well, the race starts in a few days. I mean, you could go and defend your title if you really want, but I think you've got a more important job to do here, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy to be here at the Giro. It's a race I love. Done it. I've only completed it once. And then obviously a few years ago, our team had a bit of issues with COVID and had to leave the race at the first rest day. So it's nice to come back here with a bit of vengeance. We've got a great team. I'm looking forward to seeing what we can all do.
And lastly, I mean, a very clear objective. Simon Yates is one of the pre-race favourites.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on our shoulders, I guess. But yeah, I never really understood the term take it day by day when you're watching the TV as a kid. But it actually is like that. You can't get too ahead of yourself. We know what he's capable of, and I think we've all put ourselves in a great position to support him. First objective is today's time trial. I'll go back and watch him live on TV. Hopefully he has a great ride, and then first challenge will be stage four with Etna.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, interrupting our Giro coverage to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by GCN+. Now, Daniel, as we were walking up the hill, I had the GCN app on my phone watching the action. I had my headphones in listening to Rob Hatch's commentary. We actually got a bit of a shout out today because he referenced James Knox's comments from last night's audio diary. And of course, you can watch every moment of the Giro d'Italia on GCN+. From Budapest to Verona, you won't miss a single attack.
A 1,000 forint note. Banknote in the post to Rob Hatch.
Absolutely.
1,000 forints, not very much, is it?
It's not. It's about 75 pence, I don't
know.
€3. Is it? It's not much. The first Grand Tour of the year, live and ad-free, coverage of every kilometre of the Giro on GCN+, and the best analysis from the team of ex-pros, hosted, of course, by Orla Chenoui, who co-hosts the cycling podcast Feminin for us, of course. You can also watch the highlights on demand and watch the whole stages again if you want to. Catch the action where and when it suits you best. There's also a huge collection of cycling films on the GCN app with new episodes and new films being released weekly. So GCN Plus is the place to watch the Giro d'Italia, the best live bike racing all year round, and the world's greatest collection of cycling films. All of our listeners in the UK and US can get 25% off an annual GCN Plus subscription by going to gcn.eu/cyclingpod. There are territory restrictions that apply, and obviously you need an internet connection to be able to watch it. But we'll put the link in the show notes. But if you want to follow the Giro d'Italia in real time, watch GCN Plus, and then, of course, listen to us.
Lionel, I mentioned the balance sheet of the Giro and what it will look like when we get to Verona earlier. The balance sheet of today's time trial, who are the winners and losers? I mean, Guillaume Martin losing 45 seconds after having lost a significant amount of time already yesterday. He has made no bones about the fact that he's going for GC here. He's experimented with different ways of riding in the last couple of years, and he has now settled. He's decided that he's a GC rider. He lacks the sort of change of pace, the explosiveness to win stages. So from now on, so he says, he's going to concentrate on GC. He's going to do that here, but it's not started well. Emmanuel Buchmann, 95th today, 54 seconds down. Ouch. Superman, 42 seconds down today. Hugh Carthy, 38 seconds. Hugh Carthy's had a few issues. He's had some illness in the build-up to this race. Not the best start for him, but not disastrous either. In the sort of mid-table, I would say, Jai Hindley, 32nd today, 34-second deficit for him. Bardet, I already mentioned, 24 seconds lost. Richie Porte, 22 seconds lost. Joao Almeida, 18 seconds lost. So I would say par, more or less, for those guys.
I completely missed Miguel Angel Lopez out of the tail of the Tapper. I suppose time trialing's not his strong suit, is it, really? I mean,
although he has, in a similar fashion to Simon Yates, he has pulled out some absolute stonkers. Three or four over the years, not more than that.
I'm just scarred by the culmination of the 2020 Tour de France, where I was convinced that he would pull out a stonker on La Planche de Belfie, and he pulled out a stinker, unfortunately, and tumbled off the podium. Just on Guillaume Martin, though, his kind of default is to be lying second overall after the second rest day and then plummet to ninth. Well, maybe he's going to do a reverse.
It's the classic a la Atapuma, isn't it? Approach to riding GC. We're going to hear from Guillaume Martin. I'm going to create a rod for my own back here by vowing that we will hear from Guillaume Martin over the coming days about his experiences in Sicily over the past few months, because he spent a lot of time on and around Mount Etna, and he's really fallen in love with Sicily and developed quite a deep knowledge and appreciation of the food, the landscape, the volcano itself. He knows a fair amount about the flora and fauna of that region. So we're going to hear from him about that. Line of the winners, I would say today, besides obviously Simon Yates, Wilco Kelderman, 7th, lost 17 seconds. Tobias Foss lost 17 seconds. Lo Squalo, the shark, Vincenzo Nibali, 12th, he lost 19 seconds. And Tom Dumoulin, now, only losing 5 seconds would appear to be a good result. However, he was quite disappointed at the finish. I think he was quite happy when he came over the line, relatively happy, although he said he blew up a bit in the second half. But then when he was told very shortly afterwards that Simon Yates had just beaten his time, it looked as though his whole world had collapsed.
Well, it was interesting because a member of the Giro staff was there sort of really badgering him and saying, come on, Tom, you need to come down to come and sit in the hot seat. And the Jumbo-Visma soigneur said, he's not leading, it's Simon Yates. And the look of surprise on the Giro staff member's face, it told its own story, really.
And there were rumours today, there were further rumours, and these have already, well, they started to circulate a few months ago about Tom Dumoulin signing for Bike Exchange. And of course, that we mentioned the bike sponsor Giant earlier in the podcast. They have a huge interest in the Dutch market, and that was one of the things that was mentioned when these rumours first surfaced a few months ago, and they're starting to ramp up again. There are a lot of transfer rumours as well about Richard Carapaz, the Ineos team leader. The consensus seems to be, we've spoken to a few people about this over the last few days, the consensus seems to be that he will not be staying at Ineos Grenadiers next year. He's out of contract at the end of the year. There's talk of a move back to Movistar. But that puts a slightly different complexion on his Giro, or it could do. It would do under normal circumstances, a big GC leader who knows that he's leading. However, 28 seconds lost for him today. That wasn't too bad, was it?
No, it wasn't. The sort of course that necessarily would suit him. Carapaz will probably look at the results and think he's in the kind of lower half of the GC today at least, but he was actually the fourth fastest Ineos Grenadier. Ahead of him, Richie Porte, Pavel Sivakov, and Ben Tulit, young Ben Tulit, riding his first Grand Tour. He was fifth on the stage, very impressive result.
Ben Tulit with the best performance by an Ineos Grenadier and the most surprising pronunciation of a surname.
Well, T-U-L-E-T-T, Tulit.
No, it is correct. You're right. We had this out, didn't we? We really had this out this afternoon that it is how you would pronounce it if you read, you know, if you respect conventional English pronunciation. But Tulit, it's Tulit, not a more common English surname.
Well, if it had two L's,
if it had two names, but that is a common English surname with two L's, isn't it? Whereas Tulit is not as common.
Either way, you spoke to him.
I did
about
speak to him about
Giro
something completely different, about the time trial, about cycling, about the Giro d'Italia.
Well, Ben, your first time trial in a Grand Tour, and not too shabby, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I can walk away with that pretty happy. I was looking forward to today, actually. You know, the weather's nice. So nice to see all the crowd back and to see it lined from start to finish. So that was really motivating and really exciting to see. Certainly pushed me on today. Yeah, I'm happy with that performance there. I'm looking forward to experiencing my first Grand Tour here, and that's exciting. So yeah, I'm happy with today.
Spoken to a few riders who have said yes, it was one for specialists. Others, well, there have been quite a lot of smaller sort of climber type riders who have finished well today. They've said it wasn't one for specialists. What do you say?
I don't really know. I don't really have a lot of experience in time trialing, to be honest, so I don't think it's fair for me to give an opinion on that yet. But no, as I said, I'm happy with my time, and we'll see what comes from it.
And a lot of riders, well, they've not experienced crowds like this for a long time because of COVID. Again, it's your first experience, but just how intense, how excited were they on that climb in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't even hear myself think, to be honest. It was lovely to experience such amazing crowds. My first time being at a cycling event where I'm racing, where there's that many people. I don't even think at a cyclocross you get that many people, so that says something.
Well, Lionel, Ben Chulitz's performance today was very much in line with what is turning into a fantastic season for Ineos Grenadiers, and a surprising one, because the results, the successes, the surprises are coming on the whole from unexpected sources, aren't they? Some young riders who weren't hyped, they weren't touted as the next big thing. We all remember Ben Turner's fantastic Classics campaign, and Chulitz's been very impressive as well. So there really does seem to have been a change in, whether it's a change in ethos, there's certainly been a few changes in personnel in that organisation this year, hasn't there? And overseeing the whole operation, certainly here at the Giro d'Italia, but I think in general as well, alongside Dave Brailsford, is Rod Ellingworth, who, as a lot of our listeners will know, was with Team Sky for many, many years, and he had a brief, a sort of sabbatical, really, wasn't it, with Bahrain Victorious. He took on the position there as team manager, principal, and has now come back to what is Ineos Grenadiers. And we spoke to him this morning in Heroes Square.
Well, Rod, one day down, a pretty good day, certainly from our point of view, just looking at how Richard, how sort of reactive he was right where he needed to be. At the finish, how did you assess the first stage?
Yeah, good. He was bang on the money, to be honest. We knew it was going to be a reasonably big group, but the climb was going to be super fast, maybe some attacks. But, you know, don't panic. You don't need to chase anything himself. Just stay in the wheels. It certainly wasn't a day to, you know, win the Giro for him, but it's certainly a day where things could happen. So you've got to be on your ball, haven't you? You know. So he was good. He felt really good as well, which was, you know, he hasn't raced since Catalunya. So there's always that little bit of, he's come back home from high altitude, back into Europe. There's always them little uncertainties with guys like that, you know. But he's the best shape I've ever seen him. He really is. And that's sort of factually as well, you know, his numbers, his weight, everything, really good.
Today there's a short time trial. And I've been kind of curious, kind of surprised that when some of the other teams and contenders have talked about their time trialing this year and the Giro, and they've talked about all the work that's gone into it, and it seems to me for not that much or not that many kilometres in this Giro, I mean, how important is today?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's like any time trial. There's always those who are going to excel in it and those who are going to be thinking about limiting the losses, you know. And you know, we always know with Richard, it's not his strength, and he has to work hard at it. The difference is, you know, he has worked at it this year. You know, he had the experience in the Tour last year, which I think has helped him sort of realise some of the gaps. And he's worked at it over the winter, and, you know, he's continued to work at it. So I think the reason why he wanted to come here was very much that the whole parkour suited him, and the lack of time trialing kilometres was a bonus for him. I presume the same for Simon Yates and the likes, you know. So and I think this time trial, you know, at the end of the day, potentially Richard's going to lose time on some GC guys here today, potentially, but it's not going to be too bad with all the corners. You know, your Dumoulins and these, they're not going to be able to really get into it on long straights, you know, so it's a good time trial for us, really.
We remember you going into the Tour last year with sort of, well, it looked like four options almost on paper, and after one day, you were probably down to two, if not one, options on general classification. How important is it that I guess Richard Port is the next man in, You've also got Pavel Sivakov, but how much have you talked about keeping 2-3 riders up there on GC to give you options?
I think it's always healthy to keep the options open as long as you can, as far into the race as you can. And you know, all our guys know exactly what our tactics are. We know exactly what we're trying to do. So, you know, it'll play out on the road. But you know, obviously having numbers on the GC is always a good option. But certainly just having numbers in the final, you know, certainly that final week's going to be critical on some of them, you know, the stage 20 day as an example. And I think with Richie Port, we've got somebody, you know, he's going well. Potentially this is his last ever Grand Tour, potentially, you know, so I think he's on fire. So let's see what he can do as well, you know.
You were talking before we started recording about the illness that swept through the peloton this spring. Yep. What do you think has kind of brought that on and made that such a factor, and how do you think it will influence the first Grand Tour of the year?
I think potentially it could do. So, I mean, you know, why is it happening? Who really knows? I think we're all speculating against sort of, you know, post-COVID time. We've all been sort of right on it in terms of COVID precautions and the hand sanitizer and all that sort of stuff, and people just haven't been mixing. So of course I presume in the world there's naturally viruses and bugs going around a lot quicker. I just know from seeing that my young kids they're full of it at the moment constantly, so you know everybody's getting something. So I do think that's what's happening. And I think when you look at say Tirreno or some of these other week-long World Tour stage races that you know massively reduced field. So you know, what's going to make the difference? You know, why should it be any different here? Maybe not. And it could be 3 weeks long and there could be only a few riders going around that final week. Who knows? So, you know, we're making a big effort to just do all we can. That's all we can do, isn't it? You know, what is in our control of, you know, our hygiene, how we're interacting with people, do's and don'ts, and just trying to stay on it, you know. Tricky one. It really is a tricky one for everybody. What I do see is some teams I don't feel like are taking it that seriously, and some other teams take it more seriously. So, yeah, we shall see. Yeah.
And just finally, Rod. I mean, it's been a great year for the team so far on lots of different fronts. On the classics front, which we're maybe not accustomed to seeing, not to this extent anyway, from you guys, but also in some stage races as well. Yeah. If you had to just sum up very briefly what has changed, if anything has changed this year, what would you say?
You know, just them young guys coming in. I think we've had a new lease of life during the winter. We've sort of gone on a bit more of a new direction about let's be brave getting out there. You know, we've got this all-in concept. It's like, you know, we've invested in people. We've brought people in. We've got Robbie Anderson, who's a colleague of Steve Peters, who's with us full-time in the team, making a massive difference. So we've got a real, you know...
Steve Peters is a psychiatrist.
Yeah, he's a psychologist. So, you know, very much specialises in sport. He works with Steve. He's part of Steve's company. You know, really good guy. He knows nothing about cycling, but he really knows what to do with the mind and how athletes work. And we've invested in people because that's at the centre of what we are, you know. And so that's been a big shift. And then this all just buying into each other, really sort of committing to each other. And then young lads have just brought it new energy. And you've got people like Geraint, Luke Rose and all that. They're really enjoying the new energy that these young lads are bringing in. You know, so I think it's really good. And there's the upward pressure as well, which is always key, I think.
The upward pressure meaning?
Well, as in these young lads, you know, they push, they're brave, they're not scared to make mistakes and they get out there. The older guys, you know, perhaps got a little bit more to lose, but they're feeling that behind them. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's about keeping their jobs and keeping their place in the team. But they're seeing these young whippersnappers at their heels. It's only going to push them on, I think. So, you know, you've got to manage it well, but it's a healthy environment, yeah.
Interesting to hear Rod Ellingworth say that Richard Carapaz is going better than he's ever seen him. I looked at the Ineos Grenadiers lineup before the Giro, and it's a really nice blend of youth and experience, isn't it? Not just in terms of you know, the Grand Tours, but just the mix of names. And it's not their absolute A team, is it? That just tells you how much strength in depth they have.
They're guaranteed to win, of course, because Jonathan Castroviejo has done 3 Giri d'Italia, and he's been in the winning team in every one.
Yeah, you have to wonder what more Eddie Dunbar had to do to get in that team, because he won the Settimana Coppe e Bartoli, didn't he, at the end of March. Looked pretty good as well in the Tour of the Alps, but missed out on selection. Was also 22nd in the Giro in 2019, and astonishingly, that's his only Grand Tour appearance for them.
Probably not unsurprisingly, he is also at the centre of some transfer rumours at the moment here at the Giro. I heard him being linked to Bike Exchange today as well.
What also interested me was just referring back to Simon Yates a bit, because he won two stages in Asturias, didn't he, last weekend, which is a sort of small, slightly unheralded race, really, isn't it? But when I look back, I realised that Richard Carapaz had ridden it in 2019 before he went on to win the Giro. Also, Carapaz rode it in 2018 when he finished fourth in the Giro. Subsequently, Quintana rode in Asturias in 2017 and then finished second in the Giro. So, you know, it's a kind of a up there with the Tour of the Alps as a bona fide preparation race for the Giro, much more so than the Tour of Romandy these days. Romandy perhaps too hard and too close. We remember when Primoz Roglic won Romandy and then kind of blew up 2 weeks into the Giro. But I think perhaps it's just race too hard to sustain that form. They need to have something intense, but then a little bit of time to cool off a bit and then come again for the Giro. But Carapaz hasn't raced since Catalunya, so I suppose these early days they'll be reassured to see that while he's not firing perhaps on all cylinders, he's looking pretty good.
And I think on the team in general, sometimes teams' fortunes turn around and it's almost coincidental, or it's a question of confidence having evaporated and then returning due to a great result by a particular rider, or it's evolution rather than revolution. I think that's the case with Bike Exchange to a certain extent, talking to people there over the last few weeks and months. They've kind of got their mojo back. They feel as though they've got their mojo back, different atmosphere this year, but it hasn't been a hard reset, whereas I believe, and what we've been hearing, is that there was a bit of a hard reset this winter at Ineos. There were some tough conversations, there were some changes in personnel. We remember that Tim Kerrison, who was the sort of physiologist, the coach, had been credited with a huge amount of their success with Chris Froome and Bradley Wiggins. He departed, and we wondered what the implications of that would be. And there has been a sort of reshuffling of the performance team, the physiologists, the coaches, and so on. And, well, based on what we're hearing, that's certainly bearing fruit. And as Rod mentioned there as well, I think what they hadn't predicted, or they couldn't have foreseen, was the real sort of jump start that these three or four young riders, new talents, Tullett, Turner, and Pidcock, there have been others, the effect that that's had on the rest of the team.
Tulit,
sorry.
Should we hear from another couple of Ineos Grenadiers?
We should. Well, at the other end of the age scale, at the other end of his career, is Richie Porte, who we think is riding his last Grand Tour here at the Giro d'Italia. A bit of a dark horse, actually. Should anything go wrong with Carapaz for the podium, maybe? Victory? Anyway, I spoke to Richie yesterday about the fact that this is probably going to be his final Grand Tour.
Just two quick things, Richie. What are you going to miss about Grand Tour racing, Grand Tour life, and what are you definitely, definitely not going to miss?
Look, I think you're going to miss a bit the camaraderie, you know. Okay, it's stressful. I think the sport's only getting more stressful and more professional, but you know, you miss the camaraderie, you know, after the stage, the laugh and hanging out with the guys. But what I'm not going to miss is...
Don't say mix zones.
No, definitely not. But I think the thing that I'm not going to miss is just, you know, I have a wife and two young kids now, and kind of crave normality in life, you know, just to, you know, take the kids to school, or even little things like having dogs, you know, like just, you know, I'm ready to enjoy this race, get it done, and you know, hopefully finish on a really good note.
And last thing, Richie, what's one thing that you used to do on Grand Tours, one mistake that you used to make and you would never make now? I don't know, it might be something to do with the way you pack your suitcase, or what's an absolute no-no you've learned of Grand Tours?
I think it was probably, you know, making too much pressure on myself, to be honest. You know, I think I'm probably not the first or the last guy to do that. It's you know, also I guess I've gotten better over the years at packing. I think I have the lightest suitcase according to the Swan, yes.
Well, Richie Porte's going to be really important in the mountains here at the Giro in Italy from Etna when we get there on Tuesday. You mentioned the balance of the team, the balance of youth and experience line. I was quite surprised how balanced it was in terms of rulers versus climbers. They've got Narvaez here. They've got Puccio. It's not a team. We've seen Ineos teams before, as Team Sky as well. They've really filled their roster with climbers, and it's almost looked like six or seven leaders at times. It's not the case here. It is very well balanced. But one guy who is going to be key in the mountains, in addition to Richie Porte, is our audio diarist, Pavel Sivakov. Now, he lost a little bit of time, didn't he, in the first stage, and we wondered what had happened with him. Today he went okay as well, but Pavel did send in an entry to his audio diary last night to explain just what had happened on stage one.
From a personal point of view, my performance was really poor. I mean, I don't know what I had today. Maybe I think I came in the race a bit too fresh. So yeah, I really didn't feel good in that last climb. I wouldn't say empty, just blocked. Yeah, lost a bit of time. Not a big deal, 19 seconds, so that's how it is. But yeah, it was not even about the time lost that I was worried. It was more about, I'm not worried, but disappointed more about the legs I had today. But yeah, I think I know a bit the issue, as I said, a bit more too fresh. So yeah, hopefully it's just going to get better and better throughout the race.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Giro d'Italia is supported by Science and Sport. Science and Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. And I tell you, Daniel, as we were waiting for our lunch, what I wouldn't have given for a tiramisu bake, a Science and Sport tiramisu bake, just something to take the edge off while we were waiting for lunch. All our listeners can get 25% off everything at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. Daniel, what did you make of Attila Valter's performance today in the time trial?
I mean, 82nd, lost 51 seconds. He's not a specialist time trialist. He knows that himself. He's acknowledged it himself. And the big story of the last couple of days, from his point of view, has been the support, the enthusiasm, which we witnessed again today. A lot of people, I noticed a lot of people in Groupama journeys, a lot of people shouting his name. And, well, should we hear from Attila again? Yesterday he said he felt it was going to be a revolution, a cycling revolution in Budapest. There was talk of buying castles. Yeah, should he be able to trade in the number of times he was name-checked by the fans for Hungarian forints? There's another castle just behind us, Lionel. Who knows whether he'll be able to afford that? Should he be able to broker a similar kind of deal today?
Yeah, I don't have to win races if it's here in Budapest. So this was really incredible. I wanted to enjoy as much as possible and do a good time, of course. I don't know yet my time. It's not too bad, but of course not in the front, I see. So I think I did a quite okay TT. I have no regrets. I just I did my max when I started the climb, and I had to stop after 20 seconds. I just couldn't resist. I had to do a sprint in the first right turn, and then I paid it after. But yeah, it worth it. I was pushing like there is the finish after 1 second. It was incredible feeling. I enjoyed the whole course. I heard my name a lot of times. It was incredible to have in a wall of people for such a long 9K TT, and it was really incredible.
Well, a lot of people are surprised by the level of support, the volume of the support here in Budapest. Do you know what the most surprising, the most shocking moment of the day from my point of view, probably yours as well, Lionel, was when we were on our way to Hero Square, on our way to the start of the time trial today, and we overheard a conversation between two riders.
Oh, my
We can't identify, well, we can't reveal the identity of the riders. We can't reveal the identity of the teams because it was so shocking. The only thing I can say in their defense is, if this was revealed, it wouldn't, in case anyone is suspecting that it might have been on certain topics, it wouldn't have resulted in either of them being imprisoned or banned.
No, it wouldn't.
But it was pretty eye-watering.
It was eye-watering. I mean, they were talking very much about an activity that similar to the individual time trial in that
you should move on very swiftly.
I was absolutely stunned to hear this. So quite openly discussed. I mean, let's go back to
Attila very, very, very briefly. Budapest, we talked about the city having been divided before. Buda, apparently the name, well, there are two theories about where the name comes from. Either comes from Voda, which is water in Hungarian, I believe, or there are those who suggest that it comes from the name of Attila the Hun's brother, who was also Buda.
I see. Well, Attila Valter was the person responsible for putting us on the hunt for the Hungarian stuffed cabbage. And last night, I mean, we could have strung this out another couple of days, really, couldn't we? But we were starting to worry that we wouldn't get this stuffed cabbage because a couple of restaurants have had it on the menu, but only as a winter dish. Last night, we struck gold, a very nice, quite a grand bistro. Not expensive at all, but very nicely decorated, immaculate service. And the stuffed cabbage was on the menu. And, well, I had it, and our agent, friend of the podcast, David Luxton, also had it. What can I say about it? Well, it's cabbage wrapped round a sort of lightly spiced paprika sausage meat mix. So there's the sort of the tang of the, I guess, slightly fermented cabbage and the heft of the sausage meat. Really the sort of thing that I enjoy, actually, that kind of vegetable with meat.
I feel quite deflated today having realised this dream.
It's over, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know, the catching of the stuffed cabbage. Similar, actually. The meat inside had a sort of haggisy kind of tang to it, spiced flavour. It was really, really good.
If we were real storytellers with a really acute sense of, a really well-developed, refined sense of drama, we would have located the stuffed cabbage minutes before boarding our plane on Monday morning to Sicily.
I'm not sure I could eat the stuffed cabbage for breakfast, to be honest, though, Daniel. I did take pictures of it, but like a lot of brown food, never photographs as well as it taste, so I will post it on Instagram, but I'm braced for the comment saying backlash. it doesn't look appetizing, but it was really delicious, and I'm glad that we tracked it down, we hunted it down. Now it's been again quite an emotional day for us, hasn't it, Daniel, because it is May the 7th, and that was Richard Moore's birthday. And my mind has drifted back to the number of times I've been at the Giro, and we've been able to celebrate Richard's birthday with him. I remember the trip to Israel, where he was far more concerned about getting a nice birthday dinner than he was about me getting my plane ticket for the transfer from Israel to Sicily. But in today's Spirito di Buffalo, Giro di Buffalo, of course. We're going to go back to 2016 and the first weekend that we covered the Giro d'Italia on the ground with the intention of going all the way to the finish. We had been to Belfast and Dublin a couple of years before that, but this was the first time that we covered the Giro, and we were in Nijmegen, weren't we, in the Netherlands, and it was Richard's birthday, and we were in quite high spirits when we sat down to record the podcast.
Il Giro del Buffalo, remembering Richard Moore.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Nijmegen.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Nijmegen, in a square outside a bar, enjoying a Dutch beer.
We are. I'm Richard Moore. That was Lionel Burney. Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Richard.
And with Daniel Freeb as well.
Hello.
Happy birthday, Richard. I notice you're wearing your birthday gift from the cycling podcast, your captain's armband.
Well, at the end of yesterday's episode, we wondered where Simon Gill had gone, didn't we, the photographer? He disappeared, and he doesn't normally disappear. And we just, well, I discovered this morning that he'd actually been mooching around Decathlon.
Well, this all stemmed from my obsession with Decathlons, didn't it? Cultivated over many years of covering the Tour de France, even dating to before that, when I used to go on holiday to France as a kid, and I'm kind of obsessed with Decathlon, aren't I? And all the incredible, well, the incredible array of sporting equipment that one can buy at Decathlon. He came back with red and yellow cars, captain's armband. We hoped he would come back with a javelin or a crossbow.
But we got a referee whistle instead.
A whistle. I'll use that at some point. I've got the red and yellow cards. Going to use them as well. Going to wear my captain's armband every time we're on air podcasting. just so that you guys know who's
age
in charge.
Richard today?
Yeah, I am an age today.
Are you older than Jean-Christophe Perrault, who I think I discovered today is going to be the oldest ever, or is the oldest ever, Giro d'Italia debutant? He's going to be 39 when the race finishes.
Yeah, I'm a little older than him, about the same age as Jens Vogt.
The big question is, though, Rich, when you leave the race, who are you going to give the captain's armband to?
Well, I'll toss it to the ground as I
stomp
off the pitch, and it'll be up to one of you guys to pick it up.
As the birthday boy, are you also de facto pedaleur de charme? We didn't do pedaleur de charme. We're going to do it tomorrow, aren't we?
No, we said we'd start it in Italy. Maybe we should start it tomorrow. We could do.
Anyway,
hang on. Whoa. Before we finish with the birthday stuff, what about a little rendition, guys?
Come on.
At the end, maybe we can...
In Italian?
Can you... Okay, all right.
Tanti auguri a te. No, that's enough.
Maybe we can play us out at the end of the episode. We always need to give people something to carry on listening for. I think that'll be sufficient. If you guys could play out this episode with a rendition of Happy Birthday, that'd be great.
I think, aren't there really quite controversial rights issues over the use of Happy Birthday?
We're using the Jaws theme. I don't think we should be worrying about
Happy Birthday. Anyway, chaps, let's crack on.
Speaking of the Jaws theme, that's what people are going to be tuning in for. The next installment of A Shark's Tale coming later in this episode.
Well, we've got very fond memories of that weekend, haven't we, Lionel? And just to reiterate what we said yesterday, you know, this is, in some respects, it was hard compiling these clips, and it's hard to listen to them, but it's also joyous to relive some of those moments. And we really are sort of determined to keep Rich's memory alive with us on this Giro d'Italia. It provides a degree of moral support for us as well to know that he is with us on this journey, and we'll continue with these clips throughout the Giro d'Italia, and we hope that they'll bring comfort and entertainment to all of those who loved and appreciated Rich's work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're very fortunate, aren't we, that we have a record of all of these times that we spent together, and it's tough to listen to them. As I said yesterday, Daniel, I'm not sure that I'd have had the courage to go back and listen to our archive to pick out those clips, so thank you very much for doing it. Today, Stacey Snyder's fantastic cups, mugs, cappuccino sets, whiskey cups sold out in record time, less than 2 minutes after going on sale. They had all sold out. I know that lots of people will be delighted, but equally lots of people will be disappointed to have missed out. Unfortunately, that is the only set of ceramics that Stacey is creating for the Giro d'Italia, but there will be more for the Tour de France Femme, and the Vuelta a España later on in the year. And they will be similar designs, basically a different colour scheme for the other races, but they will be similar designs. All I can suggest is that if you pre-register for Etsy as a customer on Etsy, that's the website that Stacey uses, you don't then have to go through and enter all of your details, which I think has caught a few people out. They've managed to put a cup into their shopping basket, but not managed to check out in time. But they're beautiful objects, and, well, I feel very happy for the people who managed to secure them. And sticking with the sort of porcelain type theme, all of the stage winners from the three Hungarian stages will be receiving very, very elegant porcelain vases as a prize. These vases have been made by the Holohassi porcelain factory, which is 245 years old, and they produce these beautiful designs. They've got a floral design on with 21 karat gold painting, and if you're a Formula One fan, you might be interested to know that back in the day, I think in 1989, when Nigel Mansell won the Hungarian Grand Prix, he got a similar porcelain trophy. So Simon Yates will have one of those today, won't he? And Matthew van der Poel will have one from yesterday. And I assume that a sprinter will have one tomorrow, Daniel.
Yes, I would assume so, Lionel. It's a good opportunity for Caleb Ewan tomorrow. Great opportunity for Mark Cavendish to add to his total, to his haul of victories, not only in the Giro d'Italia, but in Grand Tours in general. Arnaud Démare will also be trying to repeat his exploits of a couple of years ago when he... how many stages did he take? 5 or 6 stages in the Giro a couple of years ago. But, Lionel, we should really go off in search of a dinner that is not Jamie Oliver. With apologies to Jamie Oliver. I've got nothing against Jamie Oliver. Final bit of business. We were played in, as we always are, at the Giro tonight by Cozze, by Amaraterra. Tomorrow, we will be revealing the details of another listener offer. You will be able to acquire the Amaraterra music, some new music as well, I think, from Amaraterra is coming shortly. But stay tuned for that. We'll reveal more details tomorrow.
Well, as I said earlier, we've got quite a logistically challenging day tomorrow. They haven't made it easy for us, have they? And we've actually done this Grande Partenza without a car, haven't we? We've blagged a lift yesterday. We've done a lot of walking today. Tomorrow, it could be trains. It could be... I think you're going in the back of a van, Daniel. And I may well be... Well, we'll both be on a train in the afternoon, certainly. And I'll be calling in a favour to get a lift to the start. Hopefully, we'll all meet up in time to discuss stage 3 of the Giro. Until then, Daniel, thank you very much.
Good evening, Lionel.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.